I'm here with Dr. Bo Brock, a veterinarian out of Texas, middle of nowhere. What, could you be more specific?
Well, yeah, it's pretty much in the middle of nowhere. We're in La Mesa, Texas, which is all about 60 miles from civilization.
And the reason I mention that phrase, in the middle of nowhere, is because that's a subtitle for a book that you've written, Crowded in the Middle of Nowhere.
And yes, ma'am.
Could you tell me a bit about how this book came across, your vision, and how you first got into thinking about becoming a vet?
Well, I graduated from veterinary school over at Texas A&M in 1990, and then I went to Clarendon, Texas, and practiced a couple of years there, and then I bought this clinic in La Mesa, Texas. And when I got here, this little old town got a newspaper called Press Reporter, and it comes out a couple times a week, small, about 6-8 pages. And when, you know, somebody new comes to town, the paper come to me and said, "Will you write an article once a month about veterinary stuff for the La Mesa Press Reporter?" And I said, "Sure, I will." So first month I wrote something about rabies and dogs, and the next month I wrote something about Coggins tests and horses, and nobody read them. So I thought the third month I might just write some, you know, anecdote or event that had happened at the vet clinic and kind of humorous, and I wrote it, and all people liked it. And this old lady that lived here, she sent it to her grandson, who's a veterinarian over in Missouri somewhere, and he thought it was pretty funny, so he sent it to a national veterinary magazine, and they called me up and said, "Hey, do you write one of these things all the time?" And I said, "Well, I've just written that one funny one, but I could write more." And so that was about 1993 or 94, and I just been writing for several magazines, just funny stories that happen to veterinarians or touching stories that happen to veterinarians once a month. Well, after 15 or 20 years of that, you got a lot of stories. So I just picked a few of them out and put them in a book, and it's been great fun. It's done really well.
Well, you've treated a lot of different animals over the years, but in your heart, you're a horse doctor. Is that right?
Yes, ma'am. That's what I like, horses. I like working on horses. I like working on every animal, but horses are my passion.
When you were growing up, was it horses that got you interested in veterinary science?
Well, I grew up on a kind of a farm ranch type situation with my grandfather, who was my hero, and we had every kind of animal that there was. And I was always just taking care of them. It's just kind of my nature. And horses, you know, we made a living on them, and I enjoyed them. And I had a couple of horses that were good buddies of mine, and it was just kind of a natural fit for me to take care of them and learn how to do stuff with them so that they'll stay happy.
And I grew up on a farm in Kansas, and one of the things that isn't such a pleasant memory is I was tasked with nursing and caring for a steer, a young steer, mm-hmm. and when it got to a certain age, my dad had it slaughtered, and we were eating the beef off that steer for some time to come. Mm-hmm. But every bite I took out off that steer, you know, that was almost a pet to me.
Right, and you know what you're saying is exactly what happens to a lot of kids that grow up. You know, they show animals, they'll show pigs, they'll show steers, they'll show sheep, and they'll start off little old bitty kids, you know. I mean, 9 years old, and you get a pig, and you take that thing and raise it from a little bitty pig up to a great big pig and walk it, and feed it, and love it, and take care of it. And then you go to a show, and they just take it away from you and go eat it. And I think that's the reason that rural children have a little more utilitarian view of animals than city people do. And that's no discredit to anybody. That's just, like you said, you know, when you're eating your calf, you learn next time not to get so close to them because it's pretty hard on you when you wind up eating your best friend.
That's also probably true for a veterinarian. I was just speaking with someone here locally that actually thought about becoming a vet, but just couldn't stand the idea of getting close to an animal patient and then losing them.
Oh, it's the truth. I mean, and you know, I'll tell you, I thought that would get better the older I got. I'm 52 now. I've been a veterinarian for half my life. I got out of vet school when I was 26. And, you know, you try to keep yourself kind of emotionally distant from it, and it's really hard to do. And I thought, you know, I'm a little bit soft to begin with. And I thought the older I got, the more I'd kind of callous up. But it hasn't been the case. I've turned into a bigger crybaby than I was 26 years ago.
Now, if we're talking about animals, as a class, as a species, what are some of the worst patients you've had? For me, I think cats.
Yeah, you're right. Cats are scary. I'd rather work on a two-year-old unbroke horse than I would a mad cat, because they can get you from every direction, all four legs, their head, and they're faster than lightning. Yeah, you got to be careful with a mad cat. They'll hurt you.
What are the more interesting cases that you've had to deal with over the years?
Oh, there's a lot of those in the book, but one that's always kind of good to tell. I got three daughters, Emily, Abby, and Kimmy, and they're all pretty grown up now. But back when they were younger, the youngest one was about five, and then seven, and the next one was nine. And one night, it was kind of in the summer, we had a horse. They called from Rio Doce. We do a lot of colic surgeries on horses. They called from Rio Doce in Mexico, said they had a colic horse. Be here about 2 o'clock in the morning, and that happened quite a bit. Of course, that's when your daddy's a veterinarian. That happens all the time. They don't even think twice about it. But the horse gets here, and they unload it off the trailer, and the guy driving the truck, you know, he says, "Now, this horse is special." You know, and I hear that all the time, so I really don't pay that much attention. He said, "This horse belongs to Toby Keith." I thought, oh, man, I can see it now. This thing's going to die, and Willie and Toby are going to be singing a song about the dumb vet from West Texas. But we did the surgery, and everything went okay. I got home the next morning just about the time the girls had sat down to eat breakfast, you know, and I come walking in the house all dirty, and I said, "Guess whose horse I did surgery on last night?" And they said, "Who?" Because, you know, they liked Toby Keith. They listened to all of his music and had his CDs back then, as we called them, and I said, "Toby Keith." And boy, I mean, those little girls were just happy as they could be, you know, couldn't wait to go to school and tell their buddies, except the little girl. She's about five or six. She said, "Well, I knew that was going to happen." And the other two girls looked at her and said, "You couldn't have known that." And she said, "Yeah, I knew that was going to happen. You're not supposed to give beer to horses." And so she heard that song, "Whiskey for My Man, Beer for My Horses," and she just knew someday that horse was going to have colic surgery from her dad.
You know, you grow up with the jokes. I mean, I don't think it's unique to farms. I remember the joke about the one-legged pig.
Oh, yeah? What is it? I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, fellow was visiting this farmer friend, and saw that over in a pen was this pig, and it had one good leg and little supports and crutches on where the other three legs should be. And he got to talking to this farmer. He said, "Well, what's up with that pig?" He said, "Well, let me tell you about that pig. That pig is a special pig. You know, our house, our barn burned down, 5 years ago, and I was asleep in the barn, and pig woke me up and saved my life." And the neighbor said, "Well, okay, well, but why has he got?" "Well, let me tell you something else. We had that big flood. Remember that big flood we had out on the boundary there, 2 years ago? Well, that pig jumped in and saved the life of my little girl. Had fallen into the creek." And the neighbor said, "Well, that's pretty impressive, but what's that got to do with it?" "Well, let me tell you one more thing now. That pig is so smart, it beats me at chess and checkers, and I've taken that pig all around to the fairs, and he has made me a ton of money on bets, and let me tell you, that's a great pig." And the neighbor said, but why has that pig only got one leg?" He said, "Well, pig that good, you don't want to eat all at once."
That's funny. Yeah, grow up with a farm joke, so you're right.
But, you know, that's the point is that, you know, I think that as a class, farm folk have, a unique sense of humor. You sound like a cowboy to me.
Oh, well, I wouldn't go that far. I always wanted to be a cowboy, but I never was good enough to be one of them. Some of my favorite people are cowboys. I sure do enjoy being around those people. They have a sense about them and a way about them that's quite remarkable to me. They can fix nearly anything. They can ride nearly anything. They can doctor nearly anything. You know, they can stay out when it's burning hot outside or freezing cold. It just don't complain a lot. So I like being around those people. They're fun people to know. They're pretty pure people. I like them.
So where did you get your humor from, Dr. Brock? I mean, growing up, who in your family was the joke teller?
You know, it was everybody was. So my mother is incredibly funny. My father was incredibly funny to be around. All of my grandparents were just had absolutely wonderful. And, you know, when you grow up with that, you think everybody in the world is that way. Because when you're a little kid and everybody's always laughing and joking and finding, you know, great perspective on life, then that's the way you are. And then when you get out of the world and you find out that not everybody, you know, I mean, I've gotten more trouble joking around with people that don't know how to joke around than I have just about anything. It's just a genetic way of seeing the world. I feel pretty blessed to have the perspective that I have, because most of the time I'm looking for, you know, when you write an article, you have to write a funny article. Just think about that. You know, you have deadlines. Two times a month, I have to have a funny article written for some periodical or some journal or something. Well, when you're doing that, you have to walk around all day long looking for something funny. And when you are, you know, I found what that did to me was it actually made my perspective of life towards happy, you know, and it's been a blessing, really. When you think about that, I mean, if I had to write sad articles every, you know, I'd probably be a grumpy old fart right now.
You know, I think that there are animals like horses, some of which have a keen sense of humor. In fact, downright sarcastic. They can step on your foot, pretend it's an accident, but you know good and well they meant it.
Yeah, you're probably right. I think they're just as different as we are. You know, I work on them all day long. We saw about 12,000 horses at this clinic in 2015, so I've seen lots of freaking horses in my day, and they come through here, and they have different personalities just like people do. You know, some of them are very kind, some of them are very mean, some of them are spiteful, some of them are giving. They just don't express it in words. You can sure see it in all their other mannerisms.
Of all the animals you've had to work with over the years, have you ever been scared by an encounter?
Oh, yeah. I think when you're not scared, you're in trouble, and I still get scared to this day. You know, I always walk around here all day long saying I'm scared of horses, which is sarcasm, but I want everybody around me to realize that we're working with an animal that weighs as much as the entire offensive line for the Dallas Cowboys and has one small brain. And you can't, it's like driving, you know, you got to pay attention. When you get comfortable with it, that's when you get hurt. And I've been scared a lot. I mean, I've been hurt lots of times too. And you get hurt once, you're pretty leery and you can be scared. It's okay.
What was the dumbest injury you've ever had?
Well, I was, you know, racehorses kind of have a place. Racehorses they're high spirited and they're athletic, and I was working on a racehorse that I thought had a neurological condition, and we do a test on them. It's called a tail pull test, because you really can't, you know, take one of those little hammers and hit them on the knee and see what their neurological reflexes are. So we figured out ways to test their neurological system. And one thing we do is we have them walk and we pull on their tail. It's called a tail pull test, and we can see how they put their feet on the ground during a part of their stride and kind of detect their muscle tone if they're getting weakness. Well, this old racehorse, well, it wasn't old. It was about a two-year-old racehorse, and it was acting a little neurological. So I went to do a tail pull test on it. They started walking the horse, and I pulled its tail, and that horse kicked me, baby, kicked me in my right hand. And while I was pulling on his tail so fast, I didn't even have time to move my hand, and broke my old poor thumb into pieces. Just broke it like it was a stick. And of course, I went and x-rayed it myself, because, you know, I got an x-ray machine, and I knew it was broken. I heard it snapping, and that thing was broken all to pieces. That horse got me, man. It got me. And I've been got lots of times, but that's the one. And it was just my fault. I should have touched that horse a little bit and tested it out before I just grabbed its tail. He told me no. When he told me no, he wasn't joking.
We know to be careful around a horse's hind end.
Right. Yeah. But you sure get to where you take it for granted. I mean, I walk around horses all the time, and I, you know, all you got to do is get kicked one time, and you remember you were being stupid. Most of the time, they're not going to hurt you. They don't want to, you know, they just want to get by and live and be happy. But every once in a while, you get one in here, you know, and if you own a horse and you're around it all the time, then you know what makes it mad and you know what makes it kick. But, you know, we get horses in here. Most of them, we don't know anything about. They just show up. We don't know anything about them. And yeah, you got to be careful.
Did you ever get a sense from any of the animals you worked on that they actually had a sense that you were trying to help them?
Oh, yeah, there's some chapters in that book about that, actually. You know, it's You know, there's a bond that goes between animals and people that is, you know, it's very meaningful to me from what, because of what I do. But when you see people come through in your life over and over like I do, when they love their dog or they love their horse and it's their best friend, and you know, they're very emotionally tied to it, you can watch those animals love people back. And you can tell. Horses are, you know, we'll have somebody leaves their horse here that's got a hurt foot, you know, and we doctor on the thing for 8 or 10 days, and the horse gets used to us, and we get used to it, and then their owner comes in to get them, and they make that little horse sound when they see him, you know, like when the food's coming out, and you can just feel that horse comfortable again because his buddy has arrived. Yeah, there's a great deal of emotion that comes from animals to people. It's fun to watch. I mean, you got to look for it. You got to understand it. But once you understand it, you see it happen. It's a cool interaction.
Now, there are vets all over the country, all over the world, but you probably have a fair percentage of people from out of state and further. Why do you think people are traveling that far to bring you an animal to treat?
We've just been blessed beyond what we deserve. Maybe it's because we just look for happy things. You know, it's so easy to get bogged down in aggravation, and people will aggravate you. You know it as well as I do. When you got to work with people all day long, the ones you don't remember are usually the best ones. The ones that you do remember, the ones that are griping about something. But we've got a good team of veterinarians. There's 7 veterinarians at our clinic, and I think we're pretty skilled at what we do. We're really, you know, pretty good surgeons and lameness people and medicine people. But I think that perhaps the reason people come to see us is because when they get here, they feel like we want to fix their animals and we want them to be happy. And you know, you that way. If you go to the doctor and he does a great job but he has no bedside manner, you know, you're not going to really enjoy that interaction. But if you go and they love on you and have fun with you, and I think that's probably why people want to come here, because most of the time we're looking for happy.
Now, what's the most surprising animal that you've actually been asked to treat?
I'll tell you, one day I'm sitting right here where I am right now, and a big old truck pulls into the parking lot, and it doesn't have anything on the side of it. It's just a big old semi-truck, you know, with a big old bed on the back of it, and this guy gets out of the front and comes ambling over to me, and he says, "Anybody here work on an elephant?" I said, "Well, I don't know. It's not one of our most common patients." And he said, "I got an elephant here with a bad tooth." And I said, "Well, I'll have a look at it." You know, I didn't know what to do, but I work on a tooth. And so he opens up the side of that big old thing, and there's 3 elephants in there that belong with the zoo. And this one elephant comes out, and she's the same age I was at the time. So I can tell you, I was 38, and so was that elephant. And he got that thing out of there, and, you know, I mean, this thing's big. I don't know if you've ever been around an elephant. Well, I didn't know how big they were. And she comes up to me, and she's got that trunk, you know, and that's what they use kind of as their tactile organ. And I don't know, when you was a little kid, I don't know if you ever swung the vacuum cleaner hose around, and it makes that woo noise. Well, that old elephant, she came over to me. She wanted to say hello, and she started sniffing around on my head and swinging that thing around, you know, and it sounded like that vacuum cleaner. And she kind of explored me all over and made sure I was okay. And then he told her some commands, and he had Reese's peanut butter cups, and that was what he used to control her.
Of course, the Reese's peanut butter cups also probably the reason she has a bad tooth.
Yeah, probably is. And so... And that's all we had for restraint. I mean, he had a little old bitty stick that he would kind of tap her around with, but we're just standing out in the parking lot in La Mesa, Texas. If that thing would have wanted to leave, there's no way we could have stopped it. That thing was huge. And so I had to stand on a rock to even see in the mouth of that thing. And he'd tell her, and she'd roll her old big trunk back and open her mouth up, and I'd shine a flashlight in there. And sure enough, she had a bad tooth, and it looked like it was pretty sore, and, man, I'll tell you, that was scary, because all she'd have had to done is wrap that trunk around me and pick me up and conk me on the ground a few times, and that would have been canceled Christmas for me. But I went in there and worked around on that tooth and floated down on it. That old elephant just stood there, and every once in a while she'd kind of push me away, and then we'd give her another Reese's peanut butter cup, and I'd go to working on it again. And we finally got the thing squared up and fixed back, and she hopped on the trailer, and off they went.
the bigger the animal, the riskier the profession. But it's also a matter of energy. We're talking about the cats and such. You've said that there were times when you were wary, and certainly horses are fair size. But what do you think was the most dangerous or scariest animal you had to deal with on a regular basis, or even a one-time thing?
Well, you could get in some pretty scary stuff with cattle. And, you know, most of the time when we work with cattle, we're with professional cowboys that do it for a living, and they understand it. But every once in a while, you'll get somebody that comes from town that wants to be a cowboy, and they'll get a bunch of cows. I've been in some pens with some cattle that were stampeding, and, you know, they get worked up and get crazy, and there's really no place to go to get away from them. And I've been really scared a few times in deals like that, and almost every time it was with people that weren't very good at handling stuff.
Some people just really shouldn't be taking care of animals.
No, and some people shouldn't have horses. And I've actually told people that, you know, you just don't need a horse. You're going to get hurt. It's not a big dog, and that's what they want to treat them like. You know, they get them all spoiled, and you know, that horse doesn't have any respect, and the next thing you know, they're hurting somebody, and I've seen that happen quite often.
You get into that with people that want to take care of a wild animal, and they think the wild animal's going to be a pet to them, and you know.
And I don't even work on those. If they call up, I don't work on them because it's against the law for one thing, and then it's just, you know, I can remember vividly these people bringing in an adult bobcat that they'd caught, you know, in a cage that was no way near strong enough for a bobcat, and you know, I just told them, you ain't getting that thing out. Somebody here get hurt or killed. And you know, we could call the game board and get it, you know, get it fixed where it's good for the animal and the people. But you're right. People just do stuff like that, and it's just nuts.
Well, there are lots of people who are nuts in the world, and there are a few animals that people can make nuts.
Yeah, that's the truth. You're right. Exactly right.
Well, is there anything else that you might like to mention about your book or about your practice?
The book was just a sideline for my life. It kind of just happened without intent. But, you know, the one thing about the book that maybe is worth talking about is the fact that there's not anything negative in it. It's positive. It's about rural America and values. And there's not any racial bias or political anything or villains. It's just a happy book to read. And when you get done with it, hopefully you'll feel better about being just an American. You know, just it kind of symbolizes what all we've went through. It's maybe a step back in time almost.
I have been speaking with Dr. Bo Brock, a veterinarian based in La Mesa, Texas, and he's written a book entitled Crowded in the Middle of Nowhere, Tales of Humor and Healing. And, you know, while we're at it, you know, humor sometimes has a lot to do with healing, doesn't it?
I think so. Yeah, you caught the subline right there when you read it. You sure did.
All right. Well, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Yeah, you've been a joy. You're good at what you do. Thanks for having me on.